radioalbion.com.
Well, that's the round table. We dance where we're able. We do routines and call the scenes to footwork in bed cable. We dine well here in Camelot. We eat ham and jam and spam a lot.
Hello and welcome to the Radio Albion Roundtable. Today's date is Monday the 28th of December 2020 and you are listening to me, Sven Longshank, streaming at radioalbion.com. Yes, once again, it is a Radio Albion Roundtable and that means that I have with me today Grandpa Dan and Dr. Matthew Raphael Johnson. Grandpa, good day, sir. How is your Christmas? Have you had a good Christmas?
It was a great Christmas, and now what a great way to top off this spectacular year known as 2021 to sit around and discuss spicy topics with you guys. Which I'll say right now, I plan to go completely off subject. I just have to bring something up about Russia or the Soviet Union so I can hear Dr. Johnson talk about it, because I enjoy it so much. So yeah, no promises to stay on subject or stay on topic. It's going to be a fun show. I guarantee it.
Excellent. We haven't done one of these since August actually. So yeah, this should be fun. Matt, how are you doing today? Have you had a good Christmas?
I have to admit, it's been the best Christmas I've had in many, many years. One of the most exciting, one of the most interesting. Financially, of course, it's always a struggle. And I think that's the case for a lot of us. It's always fun to be with Grandpa Dan. Appreciate the name change, by the way. Very good. Dan's thing is not staying on topic. My thing is going on for too long. I think the shortest thing I have is like 15 single space pages. That's like an introduction for me. So, you know, you guys want to yell at me and say, shut up. I won't be offended. I fully understand. So, but otherwise, everything is going pretty well.
Excellent. Well, I've had a good Christmas as well. I'm looking forward to the new year. We've got lots of excellent content on Radio Albion for the week. We've got some new Greatest Britons, which I'm actually most proud of, the Greatest Britain series. So listeners have got that to look forward to this week. And of course, our topics for discussion today. The first one, a very important subject of the year, was the coronavirus. And our opinions on the coronavirus appear to have really changed quite a lot. First we heard about it was Christmas last year, and then in January and February it seemed to get really serious, and we heard about this virus that came out of a wet market in Wuhan with bats, and apparently it came from bat soup. And the thing was that everybody in the market had got this virus, and all the animals in the market had died from this virus. And it was spreading through the air, and it was really quite horrific at first. And there were all these videos of Chinese people falling down dead at the market, falling down dead, apparently, in the streets. And everybody was really, really terrified of this. And the masks sold out. You couldn't get hold of the FFP3 masks for love nor money. They even went up from about $2 a piece to $50 a piece. And everybody was really, really quite concerned about this. And I can remember looking at reports and thinking, well, this is really bad. If people get this, we don't know what the death rate is. And it looks like it knocks out your immune system, and all these people in China are being locked into their houses and locked into their flats. We could actually see the Chinese police welding up the blocks of flats and spraying all this unknown chemical into the air to apparently get rid of all the bugs. And then the next thing we know, it's March, and we're told that it's managed to work its way into our countries. And of course, we've been saying, well, you've got to close the borders. That's the thing that needs doing, close the borders. And then we were told, oh no, it's racist to close the borders. And Boris Johnson made a point of walking around the hospital and shaking hands with all the Chinese people in the hospital to show that he wasn't racist. And then he caught the virus and he didn't die of the virus. And quite a few people caught the virus and didn't die of the virus. Gradually, as we made our way through the year, we discovered that the death rate of the virus was less than 0.5%. You had to be over 70 for it to be 0.5% as well. And in actual fact, there were less people dying this year than, well, the same amount of people dying this year on average as actually died last year. But one of the really bad side effects of this was that all the old people died in the nursing homes. Rather than looking out for the people that we really should have been looking out for, we locked everybody down and then put the people with the illness into the old people's homes and killed off all the old people. So then it became known as a sort of boomer course. So basically we've ended up wiping out lots of old people. We've ended up destroying our economies with the lockdown, and we've gone from thinking that it's the Black Death to realizing that it's not really much more than the flu. And we're still treating it as if it is the Black Death. Our governments are refusing to go back on their plans because they've now come out with all these expensive vaccines. But before we start talking about the vaccines, I guess we should really discuss this trajectory of the year. Grandpa, is my assessment of taking us up to the vaccines, is that a correct one? Have you got any thoughts on that?
Well, what the listeners need to keep in mind here is we're going to be each one hitting, you know, these different topics from 2021. And what people need to always bear in mind is not to view these different topics in isolation. They're all related. And that's a mistake I think a lot of people make. They focus on coronavirus or these, you know, we've had these city burnings and, of course, the election fraud. And people tend to look at these things as individual incidents. And a person, I think, really needs to keep in mind that they're not. These things are all working together towards a greater agenda. Yeah, of course, what better way? You can't talk about 2021 without opening up talking about the doom flu, because, I mean, that has been the overriding theme of 2020, is the year of the doom flu. And you're right. When this first started off, I mean, you know, we're not omnipotent. When this thing first started off, none of us knew. I mean, we didn't know. And we don't know anything about this thing. They threw out this information, told us it was going to basically kill everybody. And again, we didn't know. And everybody, I was like you. I'm like, maybe this thing is serious. Maybe it's going to be, you know, really, really bad. And people are going to be dropping from it. But the first clues was their handling of it. The Chinese went in and locked down Wuhan. And what did the U.S. do? While telling everybody this is the most dangerous thing ever, they went in and flew Americans out of Wuhan and brought them here. I mean, which would be like the absolute worst thing you could do if you really believed this was the worst thing ever. And that should have been our first clue. And I guess for many of us, it was. But that was one of the first dead giveaways. Now, as this thing has rocked along, we realize, you know, that it's essentially a hoax. I mean, it's a hoax in relation to their reaction to it. It's not a hoax, like it doesn't exist. I mean, it exists, but as you've already pointed out by their own numbers, the survival rate is like 99.5%. So, you know, we know there's another agenda at work here. You brought up the masks. The masks, if you'll remember, they came out at first and said masks didn't do anything. Don't worry about masks. Then they came out and said, well, you have to wear this particular sort of mask. And that was the first narrative. You have to wear a mask. You have to wear this type of mask. The only thing that's going to work, nothing else will work. But then they realized there wouldn't be enough masks. So I think that was kind of just a push, because I think 3M was like the only company making those masks, and 3M wasn't going to be able to produce enough masks. And the larger agenda called for conditioning people to submit and wear the masks on demand. And they realized, well, that won't work if people just simply can't get the mask. So then that narrative switched to just any kind of mask. If you put a piece of window screen over your head, and yes, I know of somebody on the internet who told me that's what they did. They made a mask out of window screen. I thought it was pretty lousy. You just have to put something on your face, which told us right away that has nothing to do with protecting you from this doom flu, but instead it was about making you submit, making you go along, be sure you go along and do as you're told. As why? Well, now we're moving in, as you point out, to the vaccine. They're really pushing this hard now. Now it's they're creating this sense of scarcity, this sense of urgency. And if you've ever been involved in sales, that's the first thing they teach you in sales and marketing, is to create a sense of scarcity and a sense of urgency. If you go down to buy a car, they're going to sit there and tell you, I've got five other people that want this car. And that's exactly what they're doing with this vaccine. They're telling everybody, well, we know you all want the vaccine, but you can't have it yet. We're giving it to the healthcare heroes. We're giving it to these people. You're just going to have to wait your turn. And all these news stories are just hyping this up. People are lining up. People want to know when they can get the vaccine. And they're trying so hard to sell this thing. And I guess we're supposed to believe it's because they're really, really worried about our health. I know I'm jaded, but it just takes an amazing ability to suspend belief to think that these people actually care about our health. Now, looking back, the Red Cross has admitted that they found this virus in blood samples from like October, November the previous year. So even the narrative that this came out of the bat market in China was a hoax as well. The flu this year has virtually disappeared. The death numbers are unchanged. The flu has disappeared. Everything has been replaced with doom flu. And the real story isn't the virus itself. It's the reaction that these governments, that the oligarchy has done in the name of the doom flu.
I just have to point out there, Grandpa, with these masks, I think the best mask I saw was this African lady who had made a mask out of beads. She thought it looked wonderful, but you know, it really isn't going to protect anyone from anything, really. And they've discovered that these masks don't actually work. They said they don't work at first. But then, of course, there was a shortage of masks. And then once they worked out, as you say, they said their grandpa that they could just tell anybody to just make masks out of T-shirts and not worry about the fact that it doesn't work anyway. Then they got everybody to do that. And you also brought up the healthcare heroes there, the TikTok dancing ladies that obviously had more time to actually make these ridiculous dancing videos on their hands when we were told that they were rushed off their feet in intensive care. In Britain, they built these massive great Nightingale hospitals that would hold hundreds of people that they were expecting to be in critical condition. And I think they had one or two people at one of them, and then they had to close it down. And they just got these empty buildings there. And we're all starting to think, well, what is really going on here? What is really going on? And then we hear about the Great Reset. And we start thinking that all of this is really playing into the oligarchs' hands. And they have just been waiting for a chance like this for all these years. And you did a podcast on this recently as well, didn't you, Matt, on the Great Reset and how this plays in. Do you want to bring that up or comment on anything else that we brought up so far?
Well, I want to mention, first of all, I'm looking at an essay I wrote. It's dated March 18th, 2020. It's called Gagarin Theater, The Real Reason for Mass Lockdown Over COVID-19. And the first sentence is, this virus has one purpose, to give the system something to blame when the economy tanks. This has become its role in world history. After years of claiming an economic recovery from the 2008 disaster, the regime now denies ever claiming that, but it's now the virus's fault. The recovery was apparently so potent that trillions in bailouts are needed because on their own, none of these firms were stable. Now, I said that in the middle of March. I never bought this story. Donald Trump made a huge error by claiming this. We had this massive recovery, the best economy in the universe up until February. The American economy never, ever recovered from the 2008 meltdown. We've been in a depression at least since then. And I've said many other times that the American psyche is so badly brainwashed and damaged that this is the only economy that could ever go into a massive depression and have no one notice. Because that's simply how Americans have been conditioned. And I recall, I believe it was 2 days, maybe even less than 48 hours, after the official date of the lockdown, which was in April, I read in the Financial Times that there was a $2 trillion bailout of American capitalism. Now, that's less than 48 hours after the lockdown was declared in the Financial Times newspaper, which means that this had to have been planned before then, which means that this has at least something to do with giving a massive injection of liquidity to American capital already in a society that's teetering on the brink of mass, you know, Weimar level inflation. $2 trillion pumped into America. Can you imagine being bailed out for your own mistakes for that much money 2 days after this lockdown was declared? suggesting we all know what this lockdown is all about. And when the economy completely collapses, as it already has, now no one's going to blame the capitalists or the bankers or usury. They're going to blame a virus that no one knows anything about. A non-person, this mysterious entity that could be anywhere, almost like a horror movie. And that's why I called it Gagarin Theater, because that's exactly what this is. I predicted back then that the virus is going to mutate. So whenever this calms down, this is back in April, that they're going to claim that there's going to be a mutation. And well, now whatever vaccine or any cure that they have is going to be irrelevant anyway. If any of you have actually seen a real antiviral mask, it is a big, looks like a gas mask. It's very expensive. It's a big deal. You have to change the filter all the time. It's actually a very complicated thing. Not a stupid piece of Joanne fabric that you wrap around your head, as if that has anything to do with an antiviral. Can you imagine being this ignorant to believe that? I've only worn a mask, I think, twice when I was made to, because I was in a store. I didn't want them to get in trouble. I think very early on I did it with a big roll of my eyes. I knew this was nonsensical from the beginning. It has a economic and financial foundation, and that is that's why this virus exists. It's able to cover over the massive depression, economically speaking, this country is now in.
Well, we have the mutant virus here in Britain. This has been the excuse to take Christmas away from us, in actual fact. Boris Johnson promised that we would have a break in the lockdown just in time for Christmas. We could have 5 days of Christmas and all visit our families. And then, lo and behold, a few days before Christmas, the new mutant strain appeared. And we've had just masses of lorries that have been stuck. They can't actually get to France because Macron said, right, now you've got this virus, we're not going to allow you into France unless you've had a test which says that you're clear of the virus. And I think they found two or three people so far have actually got the virus out of the thousands of lorries that are just stranded on the motorway there. And the tests themselves, we were told a couple of months back, that are just not accurate. I think something like 90% false positives, where they're spinning the virus around so many times, it's going to tell you that you've got the virus, whether you have or you haven't. We're in a right state of affairs here. We've been in lockdown all year. They now tell us that we have the vaccine, and the vaccine is going to mean that we could lift the lockdown in April. But of course, now we've got the new mutant strain, which was predicted as well. I think Andrew Anglin predicted that there was going to be a new mutant strain. The way he's covered this has been interesting as well. At first, he was showing all the scientific articles that were saying that this was, you know, this was just like the Black Plague. And then he was pointing out that it's really no worse than the flu when you actually look at the figures. And I do have to give him credit for that, for being one of the first people to actually call this out. Red Ice as well, they changed their tune. At first they were saying that this was, you know, this was the end of the world. And then when they looked at the statistics, they had the courage to say, well, no, actually, I'm not quite right here. And I was really rather worried about this earlier on in the year. But as we managed to make our way through into the summer, looking at the statistics, looking at the number of people that are actually dying from this, and looking at the way that they're massaging the statistics as well, then I've really sort of changed my ideas about it. And I think I'm inclined to agree with you, Matt. This is all to do with money. That's what this is. It's a big excuse for the fact that the economy was about to crash, and now they're going to try and bring in their plans for the Great Reset, where they get rid of everybody's debt in exchange for a universal basic income. And everybody will then be working for the state. They've got rid of all the small businesses. They've managed to make lots of money for the big businesses, for the Amazons, for the Apples, for the Googles. And they are going to be these huge companies that control just about everything. And of course, now they're going to be bringing in passports and biometric data, chips that they can put within you, which will say whether you've been vaccinated, whether you've got the latest vaccines or not. And of course, that brings us to the vaccines themselves, the first ever mRNA vaccine. And the vaccine companies have been absolved of any liability if anything goes wrong with this. And in actual fact, it's gene therapy. It's telling your body to, telling your very DNA to create something which it's not naturally supposed to be creating. So there's a big fear about what this is actually going to do. Could it render people sterile? That's one of the suggestions. We've seen people have allergic reactions to it. And the thing is that the vaccine itself is 99.5% effective, but the actual immune system that we have is 99.9% effective. So the immune system itself is more effective than the vaccine. The average life expectancy of somebody is actually less than the average life of people that are dying of the vaccine. I think the average life of people is something like 85, and the average life expectancy of somebody who dies of coronavirus is something like 84. So why would anybody want to be taking this experimental vaccine? And yet they are giving it to people. And they're also saying that that it needs to be going to black people first and non-whites first, because they are the most at risk from this. And of course, what we could see, all of the blacks and the non-whites in serious trouble from taking this vaccine. But of course, they're very wary of taking it in the first place, because there's been a lot of experimental stuff done with vaccines in Africa that have had some very negative effects. But that really brings us to the non-white question. And this year we also had all these Black Lives Matter protests, Grandpa. Do you want to give us a summary of what happened there with Black Lives Matter this year?
Well, I just want to take a minute to shill Dr. Johnson's podcast on the Great Reset. I've been telling people to give this a listen, because a lot of people, they know about it, but they don't know about it. And it is an excellent presentation, overview of what this is about, what it entails, the details involved. And the fact, the audacity that these people actually openly use the slogan of own nothing and be happy. I mean, they're not even pretending. So it is a great show. If you haven't listened to it, I do recommend you listen to it, because it will be very enlightening. When people bring up the Great Reset, you'll actually kind of understand what this entails and what it means, and honestly, how sinister the whole thing is. Yes, of course, we did have the next thing here is the Black Lives Matter protest, which was allegedly started when a felon was arrested by police and died of a drug overdose while being in the process of being arrested by police. And thankfully, cameras happened to be there and the media was there. Just more than the media was more than prepared to present this to the public. We had these protests that just sprung up somehow magically, very well organized, very well funded, people marching in the streets. The expected rioting, looting, and burning, of course, ensued while the media continued to present this narrative of these peaceful protests. Yeah, it's all of these stories together. It's breathtaking, because what we're seeing is an experiment to see if the media can actually create an alternative reality in the minds of the people. It doesn't matter that you can look with your very eyes and see buildings being burned, people being murdered, people being assaulted, and all of this stuff. Don't believe that, because the media is telling you they're all peaceful. They even went so far as to say that these mythical the Boogaloo boys were the ones actually doing, and they're actually white supremacists sneaking in there making the protesters look bad. It doesn't matter, just like the mass, it doesn't matter how absurd it is. In fact, the more absurd it is, the better, because the more submission is required to get you to go along. So yes, we had the Black Lives Matter. We've had people marching through the streets with open communist symbols, with the clenched fist, sometimes even flying the hammer and sickle flag. Doesn't matter. Of course, these are peaceful protests, just Americans exercising their First Amendment rights. Obviously, well organized. Nobody's going after the money. These are not domestic terrorists, because the real threat is people talking about it and criticizing it and pointing these things out. Everybody's told, on the one hand, the media told everybody, because of the doom flu, you've got to stay at home. You've got to isolate yourself. You have to wear your mask. You have to socially distance, all of that. Then we had BLM erupt, and the media said, well, that doesn't count. They don't have to socially distance. They don't have to wear a mask. They don't have to do anything. They're not doing a super spreader event like you would be if you celebrated Christmas, for instance, because they're exercising their First Amendment rights by burning down and looting Target. So it's just an overall, like, they're creating a alternate reality to see if they can get people to just go along, submit, do what they're told, and agree with the narrative versus speaking to reality. And of course, the social media companies have doubled down on banning anybody who criticizes it, points these things out, reports on it. There is no free press. The press is just simply the propaganda organ for the communists, who are now openly, you know, they're operating in the open. They're not hiding their communist symbols. They're not hiding their communist ideology. It's all out there. And yet we're all supposed, just like everything else, we're all supposed to go along with it.
Well, you bring up the fact that they were out there protesting right in the middle of the coronavirus. And this is really what tipped us off, I think, that the coronavirus thing was a scam, because nobody ended – there wasn't an overload of intensive care, and all the beds weren't taken up by people that had suddenly caught this because of Black Lives Matter going out in their thousands and tearing up the place and setting fire to things. We didn't see an uptick in cases at all. And we were told that in actual fact, racism is a more serious epidemic than coronavirus. And then when white people decided that they wanted to go out and protest the fact that everything was locked down and they couldn't wear masks, they were locked up and they were given £10,000 fines in Britain. But yeah, Matt, what were your thoughts of Black Lives Matter this year? Because, of course, we've had them before as well, haven't we? A few years back, the last time that Donald Trump was actually campaigning, that was the last time we saw Black Lives Matter. And we'll get into Donald Trump's campaign a little bit later. But what are your thoughts on Black Lives Matter this year?
Well, the first thing I want to point out is that I have the freedom to not care about lockdown, to have the financial, more or less, you know, using the term loosely, financial stability to do this kind of thing because of those listening to this show right now and because of Radio Albion. That's why I have the freedom to do this. Without it, I'd be in a lot more trouble, and I'd have to go along with more of this to be able to function in society. It's you guys that have made it possible for me to function more or less freely. And I have the freedom that academics and universities and think tanks simply don't have. And that's a big deal. For a long time, I've talked about the fakery of police violence. I've always been generally pro police. I know some of our people aren't, but I think being a white cop in a major American city is probably the most difficult job on the planet. I don't even know how they function. I don't know how they could possibly arrest a black guy, no matter how violent he is. Knowing full well, right in my own state, I think it was a York, PA, a black guy with a knife was shot before any facts about that came out. The press, the media, the local media organized protests, directly organized protests. They burned down a couple of things. And then finally, an actual fact emerged from that. It took, 24 hours. And then the violence stopped because it was very clear that this guy was a criminal. My question to Black America is, why in the hell are you romanticizing people who you wouldn't live next to if your life depended on it? All of these guys, from Rodney King to that guy in York and everyone in between, has been a criminal with a rap sheet that would embarrass Al Capone. These are men that you wouldn't want your daughters dating for 5 seconds. And yet here you are claiming to be victimized because of it. It's a ridiculous idea. None of these people are good. All of these people are embarrassments to Black America. We're all aware that violent crime in America is a racial matter. It is almost an entirely a non-white phenomenon. With the exception of the kind of methamphetamine for certain white people in rural areas. Otherwise, it's a non-white phenomenon. And people like Jared Taylor have done an amazing job in giving us the statistics and everything else. For many years, for decades, in fact, I've promoted the idea, easily proven, that Black America is a privileged group like no other race. Well, almost no other race. Never before has any country done so much for a permanently hostile and violence-prone group of people. Never before has even the most basic cognition, been halted, been shut down out of fear over this small group of people. You know, since the Floyd thing happened, we all know the cops had nothing to do with that. The policeman is looking right at the camera. I mean, we're told to believe that this guy is committing this terrible crime, looking at a camera, knowing full well what's going to happen to him. Nothing made any sense about this. Just if you watch that video, I was the very first one to point out that there's a vanity plate on that SUV that says police on it. I've never seen a police car having the word police on the plate. Nothing makes any sense about this, as always, but it doesn't matter. As Grandpa said, it is completely invented. The narrative is invented from day one. Blacks can speak about black power and think entirely in racial terms, while whites can't. Whiteness doesn't exist except purely in the negative. And we all know that the black power nonsense comes almost entirely from white liberals. And I have to be honest here. Anything that's ever negative that's ever happened to me, any bad thing anyone's tried to hurt me in my life, has either been overwhelmingly they've been white and occasionally Jewish. Black America has never harmed me on a personal level. And yet, all of this is very clearly true. White America has pumped trillions into black infrastructure, not just in America, but all over the planet. It's condemned itself. It's permitted its own cities to be burnt to the ground. The media has invented all kinds of stories to justify. It's lied about black crime. It created affirmative action. Can you imagine? In a society that's allegedly called racial, burning down its own cities in the name of black power. Corporations spend billions a year on all black scholarships and development projects. Whites have been driven out of city after city. It's refused to get angry when thousands of its own people are killed by non-whites each year. It's refused to arrest those who burn down its own cities, let alone 300,000 whites killed in the Civil War, ostensibly to free black slaves. Racism is effectively illegal. Millions of whites have had their careers destroyed for opposing the black power agenda. It literally fears being called racist more than any other epithet. And yet, their complaints remain exactly the same, allegedly from black America, as they existed in 1965 or even 1865. It's never enough. What other society has done more for its racial minorities than this one? The answer, of course, is absolutely none. Even 50 years ago, this would be called social suicide. What has America received from this investment? Absolutely zero. We all know one of the most important elements here is that words like racist have no functional meaning, and it's meant to be that way. Black privilege means that they can never be racist, no matter how violent they are towards whites, based entirely on skin color. White racism is presumed to exist if an outcome isn't to the liking of white liberals. Even at the level of subconscious racism, it's absolutely ridiculous. It's non-rational in the most extreme kind of a way, to the point where it's almost impossible to even discuss it using reason. And yet you'll see white kids, white liberals and Jews physically attacking us. I know they've attacked Grandpa in an extreme way. Jobs lost. I've certainly lost them. I know he has, for even daring to even remotely reject this agenda. And that's really what's happening here. And Grandpa, you know, stated it in the best way a minute ago, and the best way I think I've heard in a long time. And it's frightening, and I think it's only going to get worse unless our people actually do something for once.
Well, you brought up the unarmed black guy with a knife who was trying to get away from the police after threatening with a knife that ended up being shot. We also had the Wendy's that was burned down after the black guy tried to steal the police officer's taser and tried to fire the taser at him. So every time this happens and we have these black marchers that the press makes a big thing about, they always turn out to be hardened criminals. They always turn out to be resisting arrest. And yet the black community just goes absolutely wild about this, as if it's completely unjust that a police officer would defend himself against an armed black man that is resisting arrest. And this is the point, and we've tried to hammer this home this year as well, that the real hate speech comes from the mainstream media. when it lies about these events and it encourages the black community to hate white people and to set fire to cities and destroy them. You just think about the cost that has been incurred this year with all the burning down and the looting and the destroying. I think it's something like $5 billion worth of damage that's been done. And yet we've still got these politicians that are supporting them. Over here in Britain, we had politicians, Keir Starmer, getting down on one knee and pledging his support to these terrorists. Basically, they are domestic terrorists. We've had all the football teams over here in Britain as well, the soccer teams. They've all been getting down on one knee. And all the football fans are absolutely sick to death of it. The first time they were allowed back into the stadiums, they all started booing as soon as the football team started getting down on their knees. Because these rioters and looters have also been destroying our statues, something which began in America a couple of years back with the destruction of the great heroes of the Civil War there in the South. They started destroying statues of great people from our past, like Edward Colston, a great philanthropist who practically built the city of Bristol. We've even seen Winston Churchill's statue vandalized, Queen Victoria's statue vandalized. And then we have our soccer players getting down on one knee for this group of people. I mentioned last week that since March up until November, Black Lives Matter had actually made $10.6 billion. And in the whole of last year, Amazon's net income was just $11 billion. So Black Lives Matter, in 8 months, they've almost earned as much money as Amazon does. And yet we're told that this is a poor, oppressed people. They need to have all this help from whites, and we need to be putting their needs first. And yet they're making as much money as Amazon. How many university courses could that pay for? Of course, it doesn't matter how many university courses they go on, they will always be limited by that average IQ that they have, which is so much lower than the white average IQ, which is probably part of the reason why they have such high criminality in the first place, and why so many of them end up being shot by the police when they're trying to resist arrest. We've made a point of this quite a few times, haven't we, Grandpa, about the hate speech that is coming from the media against us when they lie about these black criminals when they get shot by the police.
Well, yeah, and worth pointing out here, if you'll remember, Sven, we did a show on the Daily National some time back where, you know, we had the BLM people going around protesting. They want, one of their demands was to abolish the police. Of course, I think the correct response to that is to then pose the question and replace them with what, or replace them with whom. But if you recall, we did a show on the Daily Nationals where we discussed that they had done a survey, a poll in the black community. And almost 80% of the respondents in the black community said they wanted more police, not less, not abolish the police. They actually, the people living in these war zones, want more police, not fewer. And yet you have these self-appointed, well, not really self-appointed, but appointed by the oligarchs, appointed by the media, BLM groups out there saying, no, we want the police to be abolished. They never tell us replaced with what. Again, it's all about these are the Marxists. These are the communist street thugs. That's the street muscle. It's so absurd. We had this guy, if you recall, we had the guy that went out and just walked up and executed a guy for nothing more than wearing a Trump hat. And not only did they drag their feet on arrest, everybody knew who the guy was. They wouldn't arrest him. The guy was, until finally the guy was doing interviews. He was sitting there in front of cameras being interviewed by reporters, and it became so embarrassing, they finally went to round him up and the FBI executed the guy. But I mean, it was so ridiculous. They didn't even swoop out to go arrest this guy who walks up and in cold blood murders somebody. And the media is still having the nerve to say these are peaceful protesters. So these guys are walking around. The clenched fist is a known, I mean, that's a communist salute. Imagine if people were marching around doing Roman salutes. I mean, it would just be a complete meltdown. But these people are using open communist salutes, but yet we're told that this is about some kind of, I don't know, liberation or freedom or whatever. But these are nothing more. This is the street muscle for the oligarchy. There, that's maybe that's the term I was looking for. This is the street muscle. If you just thinking about resisting, if you're thinking about not submitting and going along with the narrative, this is the threat of violence for you. You know, I mean, there is the threat of you're going to get lose your job and you're going to get demonized. There's that. But in case that's not enough to make you submit and go along with the narrative, then they've always got the street muscle, that reminder that, you know, they can take it to the next level if they so choose.
And of course, you'll get accused of being racist if you say, well, I don't support Black Lives Matter. And that's, you know, that's what happens. Anytime anybody tries to point out the political links with this group, how they support Marxism, how they're violent terrorists, and how there are other ways to deal with racism, you'll just get accused of being racist. They're even teaching this to children now. Of course, as nationalists, we are against racism. It's just that we offer a different solution that would actually get rid of all racism. Just separate the races. There would be no more racism. Nobody could ever again claim that a white police officer picked on them or discriminated against them. Nobody could claim that they couldn't study at school because the teacher wasn't the same race as them, or they weren't given the job because of the color of their skin, because they would be living among their own people. There would be no racism at all. You know, this just proves that this whole racism idea is a sham. It's just there to attack white people, and Black Lives Matter are the main shock troops for this. If you try and have a white person that wants to stand up and speak about his people, you will have a mob there of Black Lives Matter and Antifa getting violent, trying to attack the people that are trying to speak up for whites, and then the press will report on it and say that this was justified violence because it was racism that was being said by the white man. It's the mainstream media are the real incitement to haters, because that's all they do. They just incite hatred against white people all the time, with the backing of the television, with the backing of the politicians, and all we've got is the nationalists that are speaking up for our people. And we don't want to say that the blacks shouldn't be speaking up for them. They should be able to speak up for them. The Jews should be able to speak up for their people. It's just us that aren't allowed to do this. And of course, we all had high hopes for Donald Trump here as a sort of figurehead for our movement. Even though he's not a white nationalist, he has become a totem for nationalists. And this all these Black Lives Matter riots were blamed on Donald Trump. He wasn't able to put a stop to them, which he should have done. And that was because he had traitors around him, but he should have brought in the National Guard. He should have stopped the rioting and the looting. But he didn't do that. He allowed them to continue. And he was blamed for this. He's been blamed for this right the way through, and right the way up until the election, of course, this absolutely scandalous election. And I do find it a strange coincidence that we don't hear anything from Black Lives Matter from the last election until this year, when we have another election, and then we hear from Black Lives Matter again. I mean, that is a really suspicious coincidence, isn't it? Nothing for 4 years, and then suddenly they appear again, rioting and looting, only this time it looks like they have succeeded in preventing Donald Trump from getting in. Matt, you did a fantastic episode on the election and all the fraud that was associated with this a couple of weeks back. Do you want to give us a recap of what happened in this election and what your thoughts are on it?
Well, many of you know that I have mocked and attacked and parodied liberal democracy for decades, since I was 18, 19 years old, when I first read Plato's Republic, to believe that these elections that are mediated entirely by a handful of Jewish families who control the media, which is what the word media means, that has anything to do, let alone be identical with the concept of freedom, shows you again the brainwashing, the total breakdown of cognition. But this fraud, obvious fraud, this last election just proves, as always, everything I've been saying, to the point of almost parody. No one supporting Biden, and he has very few supporters before this election. He was very unpopular in his own party, or even trying to defend it. They're ruling entirely just by brute force. So if I were to summarize this, it's hard to do, but I would start off by saying that the massive turnout numbers simply can't be explained. They're impossible. You have, you know, 90% turnout in cities that averages maybe 60%. In every other election. Joe Biden was extremely unpopular amongst Democrats. He was considered a conservative Democrat from the 1994 crime bill that he sponsored. He wasn't popular in his own party. He was the last person you would think the Democrats would want. Bernie, they were excited about. The last person they'd be excited about is either Hillary or Biden, not to mention the fact he was plagued with scandal. And if that isn't enough, he was incoherent most of the time. He never once put out anything serious in terms of any policy. He never put these out. And when he tried, it was a disaster. He has no principles. He goes from one position to another as a senator, also as a vice president. Now, these are, you know, what happened here as far as the mechanics of the fraud is these, you know, the counting of the votes stopped in the middle of the night. And then you had these massive vote dumps just before dawn broke the following day. And they were all just enough to eliminate Trump's very large lead. That's why these people can't argue. They're not even trying to justify this. There's no way to justify this. The vote dumps were all for Biden, even better than the big cities voting for Democrats, which is an impossibility. They only happened in big battleground states. Biden outperformed Obama, even though Trump gained in every demographic group, including non-whites. Trump was more popular with non-whites than any other Republican candidate, and certainly the previous disasters like Bob Dole or Romney. You had mail-ins coming after the election day, which permitted local so-called monitors to delay the result. You had poll observers forcibly removed with these vote counters cheering it. You had unreturned mail-ins registered as returned and fed into the system as Biden votes. You have top scholars in for Senate computer technology laying out the mechanism of this fraud. The observers at the polls, they were Democrats, maybe by a ratio of 3-1. You have video evidence showing electioneering right at the polls. You have many violations of court orders requiring the separation of ballots by type, let alone the Postal Service whistleblowers reporting to the Inspector General saying that they were ordered to backdate ballots to the day before, and the press lied about them. The media unapologetically campaigned for Biden. He didn't campaign. He did very little. He didn't leave his basement, knowing full well that the media would take care of it and the fraud would take care of it. He didn't have to do anything. Official media polls were blatantly rigged to keep Republicans at home. But even prior to this, the voting systems, the machinery, the computers were condemned by Democrats in previous elections. Millions of Democrats believe that Biden has dementia. Millions of Democrats believe the primaries were stolen from Bernie, let alone the millions of social media profiles, mine included, were removed from all the big social media, Facebook and the rest, solely because of sharing pro-Trump information or election fraud information. I mean, Biden won while Democrats were losing more seats in the House. In Pennsylvania, my state, you had 1.8 million ballots mailed out, but 2.5 million recorded. Dominion voting systems, which I talked about before all this, were rejected by the state of Texas due to the high possibility of fraud. That very company, their voting machines were condemned in the Philippines. Their elections in 2010, 2013 were condemned in that country and never used again. Remember the size of Biden's rallies? You had single digits showing up to his rallies. And Trump was selling out massive stadiums in small town America. I could go on and on. Biden received an extremely low share of Democrat support in the primary. You had the media deliberately trying to repress Republican turnouts by calling states with 1% reporting for Biden. The purpose, of course, keeping Republican voters at home. Antifa and Black Lives Matter were threatening Trump voters daily. I mean, I watched it happen. They were threatening entire towns with destruction. And besides that, having full government and corporate backing. They're not even trying to defend this. I haven't heard anyone dismissing all that, trying to disprove all this. They're simply ruling entirely by a brute force. And that's at this point, you know, that's the best I can do. There's so much stuff here. It's almost impossible to summarize. Nothing makes sense here. And the regime is aware of this. But they're not even trying to explain this stuff away. How can the least popular Democrat dominate even better than Obama did in his second term, his second election, against that non-existent Republican candidate? I mean, they're not even trying. This is such a blatant fraud. It's almost like they created it such so as to be a fraud. They got the least popular Democrat to run against a man who was – I mean, I couldn't drive around just in this area without seeing stores cropping up on the side of the road selling Trump stuff. Entire stores and strip malls dedicated just to Trump memorabilia. I didn't see anything like that for Biden or Hillary. They didn't even – there was no campaigning. But rallies of 10 people. And I went to Trump rallies, a couple of them just locally here, with it's like going to see a football game. I mean, packed with people. Blacks were supporting him better than they have supported any Republican candidate since Abraham Lincoln and Grant and Johnson. I mean, that's how incredible this was. And yet he's supposed to have lost to a man who was extremely unpopular. Non-white voters despised Biden because of the 1994 crime bill. He was the very worst candidate the Democrats could have used, suggesting that they were deliberately creating the impression of fraud and saying, pointing to us and saying, what are you going to do about it? And if they get away with this, that means it's over. That means it's over. There's very little. If they can get away with this and there's no response, that means their domination is absolutely complete. And they're going to get rid of him. They're going to put this Harris woman, who was the first person to get dumped out of the Democratic primaries, extremely unpopular in her own party. She's not a black woman, as we all know. I mean, the whole thing is so – it's not only fraudulent, but it's in-your-face fraudulent. And so it's a big risk on their part. The regime is saying, let's see how far we can push this, because if we can get away with it, that means our domination is absolutely complete. And given that our institutions, the groups we had, the parties we had that were putting out thousands of men in the streets just a few years ago are now gone, disappeared, and now we have almost nothing to fight back with at the moment. And I hope to God that changes soon.
Well, Biden admitted that he was forming the greatest voter fraud coalition known to man or something before the election. That was just one of his Freudian slips. And right since they first announced that they were going to have postal voting, Trump was pointing out that postal voting had a terrible name for fraud. I think they saw these coronavirus restrictions and thought, well, here's our chance. We can insist on having postal voting, and then we can just throw everything that we have at it, which they did. I mean, I'm just in a state of shock. It's just so much audacity to try and pull this off in a first world nation in America. It's basically the same as they were trying to do in Venezuela, the same as they were trying to do in Belarus. I mean, if you look at the BBC, they talk about Tikhanovskaya. They refer to her as the rightful president of Belarus, saying that she was the one that rightfully won. And you've got all the media saying that, even though it was Lukashenko that actually won that election. I mean, I thought that was quite incredible to see that going on, but then to see it happening in America, I mean, one side of this I think that really surprised me is Giuliani, the former mayor of New York City. He has really impressed me. I think he's a really good guy. He's really genuine. I think there is still hope there yet as well. I mean, he's been pointing out all these dead people that were voting. And then you got Sidney Powell there as well. She's a very good lady, pointing out the Dominion systems that they're using and how they were deliberately created so that they could swap votes around. And we saw these votes being swapped around on the news channels. You could actually see the numbers changing from Donald Trump, subtracting from Donald Trump and being added to Joe Biden's numbers actually on the night itself. And then you've got Linwood, I think his name is, that this other solicitor, this other firebrand solicitor that is working for Kyle Ritterhouse or Ritterbrand, whatever his name is. And also he helped out the Canadian lad, the Catholic lad, a while back as well, and managed to sue the mainstream media for attacking him and calling him racist. So Donald Trump has got a good team on his hands, and it's not all over yet. I mean, it's the 20th of January is when Biden is supposed to be sworn in. Oh, this was the other side of it as well, this fake backdrop that the media have been using for Biden, President-elect Biden. There is no office of President-elect. And the completely fake rally that he did with all these brand new Jeeps that have been hired with actors in them that supposedly cheering the election of Joe Biden. It is the most audacious fraud that has ever been pulled on the world. And it really is on the world. It's not just on America, because this is so important. And if Trump doesn't succeed in snatching back the election from these fraudsters, the world is going to be a very, very dark place. You imagine it. I mean, if somebody could have told me, just last year, that the mainstream media, the oligarchs and the social media companies would try to steal the election in a blatant open fraud in the way that they have, I would have said they just wouldn't do it. They wouldn't be that bold. But they have been. It's just wide open for everybody to see. And every challenge that Donald Trump has tried to make, you've got Twitter saying, this is disputed. This is the president of America that is trying to communicate with the voters. And you've got Jack Dorsey interfering and saying, this is disputed. I mean, who the hell does Jack Dorsey think he is? And Trump has just become that potato head meme, hasn't he? Just without any strength, just gesticulating on Twitter with no power behind it at all. I'm monitoring the situation. I mean, come on, do something, Trump. You're the man in charge. You've got the police working for you. You've got the army working for you. He's surrounded by these traitors. I mean, it is so important that he does actually take that election back, rightfully take it back, legally take it back. And you would imagine that Biden would be saying, well, let's investigate this because I want to have won fair and I want to have won square. But he hasn't. He's gone along with the lies as well, because it's obviously a conspiracy right from the start to defraud the American public. And it was also timed because of Brexit as well, because of this Brexit deal. They wanted to make sure that Trump wasn't there so that Biden could say that he's not going to give Britain a good trade deal. So that means that Boris Johnson has had to work more with the EU. I think that has played into this as well. But you really would have imagined that Biden would say, well, I want to have won fairly. And there's obviously all these allegations. The BBC aren't covering them. The mainstream media aren't covering them. All the people Donald Trump thought were his friends, like Netanyahu, they've unfriended him on Twitter. Boris is welcoming in the new President Biden when he's not actually in there yet. It's just incredible, the stage that we're at just before we enter into 2021. Grandpa, what are your thoughts on this? I know Texas has been a real solid supporter of Trump, haven't they? They brought out a lawsuit together with all these other states and tried to take it to the Supreme Court, and they were let down. And then they said, well, how about secession? Do you think there could be secession? And what do you think of Texas and their response to this?
Well, secession is where this ends up at some point in time. It's just a question of, how far downhill, how violent things get before it comes to that. But I think this does end eventually with this country breaking up. I've said for years, listening to y'all, rehash this and spell these things out. I've said for years that the more absurd the demand, the more submission is required to go along with it. And so we see these things that are so utterly absurd. And at first glance, it doesn't make any sense, but it does make sense, because the more absurd it is that you have to go along with it, the more submission is required on your heart, on your part rather, to go along. You have to internalize it. I said the other day, I said, like with the mask thing, it's one thing when you see people wearing the mask that actually believe it. It's like, man, whatever. But there's people that go around and they wear the mask and they know in their heart of hearts that it's all BS, but they do it anyway. Imagine the mental submission that has to go along with it. And this is no different. As I said at the opening of the show, you've got to view all of these things not individually. These things are all together. It's all part of the larger plan. You've got Biden here, who, as y'all have already pointed out, he couldn't draw a handful of people to his quote-unquote rallies. He couldn't even call them rallies. The man don't know if he's horseback or afoot. I mean, he doesn't. He can't string together two sentences. Finally, they just put him in the background and had him not come out at all, because every time he speaks, you know, it's obvious that he's not there. He's not there mentally. And they did the mail-in ballots, which were supposed to put him over the top. It didn't. It wasn't enough. Dr. Johnson has said he doesn't believe that Biden got 20% of the vote, and I'm 100% in agreement with that. They thought he would get more than he did, so the mail-in ballots were supposed to put him over the top. That didn't do it. The Dominion machines were supposed to be the stopgap measure. That didn't do it. So then we had video. With documented evidence, we have videos of them bringing trucks in, cars in the middle of the night after they'd stopped the voting, unloading totes full of votes. I mean, there it is. Don't believe the video, though. The media tells you that there's no evidence. Well, there's no evidence of widespread fraud. There's no evidence, because we say there's no evidence. Don't believe your lying eyes. You have to believe us. We saw this absurd, over-the-top effort have to be made because Biden didn't get 20% of the vote. So they had to go way over the top. It had to become utterly absurd to fraud the election. Now, we knew the fix was in. I knew the fix was in on election night, because everybody went to bed that night figuring, well, this looks like how this is going to be. Trump's going to win. And then everybody woke up the next day, and it's like all of a sudden we're told, no, it looks like Biden's got it. And I knew the fix was in because early on, when Trump was doing well, obviously doing pretty much as expected. I mean, if you remember in 2016 when this happened, the media started melting down immediately. We had quote unquote journalists on TV crying, breaking out into tears because Trump was steamrolling over Hillary. We were starting to see the same results on election night this year, only the media was just like, not worried, not concerned. They were openly saying, well, we expect different results to come in as the night goes on. New York reported New York's probably going to go maybe Democrat. I mean, one assumes that. But the media literally reported they called New York for Biden, and it said on the TV screen, 0% reporting. Zero. This is our democracy. This is our rule by the governance, by the people, for the people. 0%. Reporting in New York, and they call it for Biden. Meanwhile, in Texas, everybody knows Texas, like, was this going to go for Trump? I mean, that was never in question. And the media is there dragging their feet. In fact, early on, they were like, oh my gosh, this could be the upset of the night. It looks like Texas could be going for Biden. And you look on the screen, and the only areas they're reporting are Austin, which is, for those of you who don't know, the colorectal cancer of Texas. Austin, which, yeah, I mean, you know, on the University of Texas campus, I'm sure Biden carries the day. You know, Dallas, the urban areas that were no surprise. All of the entire rest of the state, which everybody knows is going to be red. Nope, we're not reporting their results. And they're actually, we're trying to play this up as though Biden was going to carry Texas. It's absurd, but you're supposed to go along with it. Why? Because it requires submission. The mask, all of this, you're supposed to get a submissive mindset. You go along with it, even though, and the more absurd it is, the more submission required. We knew Texas was going to go to, and even when it was obvious, they were forced to report that, yes, to no one's actual surprise, Trump is carrying Texas. Even then, they drug their feet. Well, this is too close to call. And you're looking, and there's like double-digit lead for Trump. The only counties left to report in Texas are, you know, ridiculously red counties. It's not going to change. And they were still, well, we're holding off. We're holding off on calling Texas. It's absurd. It's supposed to be absurd. Because the more absurd it is, the more you have to have a submissive mindset. You submit to the mass. You submit to the BLM violence. You submit to the election fraud. You submit for the vaccine. This is the larger agenda. I believe this is the larger agenda. We're doing this wrap up of clown year 2020. And does anybody here think that 2021 is going to be less clownish? Do we think there will be less calls for submission? Do we think there's going to be social media companies are going to suddenly quit banning everybody who counters the narrative? Well, I guess they will, because there's not going to be anybody left. They've already pretty much kicked everybody off. If you want to hear freedom of speech, you can go to an internment camp like Parler or Gab, where there's nobody there to hear you, except for other people that have been kicked off of these platforms, and nobody gets your message. All they get the idea is to get the message that is being presented by the oligarchs. The approved message, as y'all pointed out, they actually have the nerve to sit there and red flag Trump's tweets and say, oh, this is disputed. They're editing these tweets. We got to warn you, this could be disinformation. But yet they have the nerve to tell us we have freedom of speech. We have freedom of speech. You have freedom of speech as long as nobody hears you. And that's, you know, that's the goal. They create this echo chamber. And then you have the media turnaround, and you've all seen it. They have these news articles where they basically, the quote unquote journalist, because you can't call, I say quote unquote, because you can't really call them journalists. They'll write an opening paragraph, and then the entire rest of the article is nothing but they're copy pasting people's tweets. Well, of course, the only people left on Twitter are commies. So you're supposed to get the impression this is what everybody else thinks. The voter fraud, the election fraud is in your face. Everybody knows. Everybody knows it's fraudulent. It's in your face. And as you said, they're going all in. They've pushed the chips all in. What's Trump going to do? Well, if he's going to do anything, my personal take on that is the courts are faint. He knows the courts were never going to work. His only out on this is to do the martial law route. That's it. He either does that or he does nothing. And, you know, I can't, obviously, I have no insight into what he's going to actually do. I could tell you if I was in his shoes, I would drop the hammer. These people are openly saying that once he's out of office, they plan to put him and his family in prison. They're not beating around the bush. They're not going to be sportsmanlike and you know, well, it's time to move on. It's time to move on and bring the country back together. They're openly rubbing their and talking and saying that once he's out of office, they're going to put him in prison. They're going to go after his family. So if I'm in Trump's shoes, yeah, it's a high gamble risk, but what do you got to lose? Rotting in prison, seeing your family persecuted? It's not over till it's over. We'll see what happens. My guess is if something's going to happen, it's going to happen around January 6th in that area, but we will see. But no, this was just kind of the coup de grace for clown year 2020. And as I said before, I don't anticipate 2021 being less interesting in the Chinese proverbial sense.
Well, January the 6th is when he's got his rally, isn't it? I mean, it is sedition. That's what's going on there. But I think there is still a chance to stop this train. And there is a chance to put all of this right if Trump gets in there, because he would have had his eyes really wide opened as to all the backstabbers and just how deep the corruption goes. I mean, he's always campaigned on a platform of cleaning out the swamp and getting rid of the deep state. Well, this really shows how far the deep state goes. It's into all the social media companies. It's all the mainstream media companies. It's the majority of the Republican Party. None of them have backed him up. And if he does get back in there, then he's going to do something about this, isn't he? I mean, he's going to have to. I mean, we should be seeing people like Jack Dorsey and Mark Zuckerberg. They should be in prison. And all these riots this year that were incited by the mainstream media, they should be in court for that. They should be held to blame for inciting the blacks to burn down the cities. And there's only one man that can actually do that, and that is Trump. And it can only happen if he manages to overturn this fraudulent result. And then we will see a change. So there is still chance for something good to come out of this. Matt, have you got any final thoughts? Anything else that you want to add to what we've discussed today?
Well, if you have 7 or 8 hours, I can give you the introduction of what I'm thinking. But I don't think we have enough time for that. So what I'm going to say in conclusion to the listeners here, I mean, the information we've already put out, that's not even in dispute at this point. But how do you deal with our enemies on a personal level? And this actually, in the past, has been a bit of a weakness of mine. Don't get angry. Don't threaten them, even though you want to. Don't use harsh language. Remember, for a lot of these people, they don't know anything. Well, in general, but they don't know anything because all they're hearing is CNN, stuff on Facebook, they're hearing a massively censored version of events. And many of us were in that position, well, when I was 15, but many of you have been in that position, you know, not that long ago. So explain the situation at the most, even in the most condescending way, but at least in the most simplistic way you can. Not even for their sake, but for those listening, for them to hear, because, you know, so many people, this is where they're going to be converting. For the first time, you have kind of ordinary normies saying, wait a minute, this is so blatant. There's something wrong here. and their own defense mechanisms are going to kick in, so they don't have to think anymore. They'll interrupt their own cognition, so they don't have to go to the conclusion that we all know. But our job is to make sure that that defense mechanism is broken, and we allow them to go from, oh my God, something's wrong, to the system is broken. That's a big, that's a tall order. But the only way we can do that is by keeping our patience, keeping our cool, not losing our, letting them lose their temper, and simply explaining things in the most accessible way possible. Beyond that, we're going to suffer. You will lose your job. You may even lose friends. You may even lose family. It's probably going to happen. There's really, at this point, there's no getting out of it. You think of the Civil War, whether it be in Russia in 1918. You think of the mass death, the mass killings, the destruction of everything. You know, and if they can get through that, we can get through it. But we're going to suffer. There's going to be extreme levels of pain. Comfort is not going to be an option here. If you want to ever be remembered, if you want to be to show the virtue that you have, you're going to have to just swallow this and realize that it's for a good cause, and take whatever's coming to you, knowing full well this is the calling here. Tolerating this, learning to deal with this kind of pain, the loss that's coming to you, and saying we know it's for a good cause, we're suffering for a good reason, and at least I know I fought when nothing else seemed possible. At least you can say that. And I've always said that I know a brother, a friend of mine, I know who they are, because I think we're going to be able to share a gulag cell together. If I think we're going to share a gulag cell together, you're my friend. You're my brother. You're my ally. And with that mentality, we have a chance.
Well, you bring up a good point there, Matt, about how we can see all of this, and we could see all of this coming right from Trump's inauguration, when the Antifa were burning down Washington, D.C., and instead of being punished, they were all let off. And we could see exactly what was going to happen over the next 4 years and how it was going to increase. And I think sometimes we forget that, you know, he's in at the deep end and he's out of his depth, and he's not aware of the things that we are aware of. And he is now, after 4 years of it. And that's why he's in the situation that he is in now. But there but for the grace of God, go we. Grandpa, what are your final thoughts? Have you got anything for the listeners before we finish here today?
Well, I just want to say I call top bunk, Dr. J. I don't mind sharing the cell, and I can live with it if you're going to snore, but I'm calling top bunk right now in the internment, in the gulag, in the internment camp. No, I mean, all we can do, look, at the end of the day, all we can do is continue to move forward. It's imperative that people keep their sanity in these insane times. And part of that is doing what you can, but recognizing that, you know, that's limited. Don't just continue to focus on things that you have no power over. We pointed out things as far as like this election fraud. You know, there are things that Trump himself can do. Okay. But you're very limited on what you're going to be able to do. And if you keep obsessing over things that are out of your control, out of your hands, that you do not have the power to sway the direction of, then you just, it'll start breaking you down mentally. It'll start breaking you down spiritually. We're going to see people as this insanity continues. We're already seeing it. And where people that have no kind of faith, no kind of spiritual, mental fortitude, you know, just essentially start going off the deep end and start really, honestly, kind of losing it. And you don't want to be one of those people. You know, so as you do continue to try to move forward, you have to continue to try to build yourself up.
And pick the battles that you can win. I mean, that's the thing. Don't get too caught up in things that are happening at the macro level. It's things at the micro level that we do have influence on. We can help the people around us. We can set a good example to other white folks. We can look out for the people that are close to us. I mean, one good bit of advice is don't get too stuck into the politics with your family. You don't want to alienate your family. You know, that's all you've really got is your family, and your race is your extended family. If you can't get on with your own family, how can you claim to be an advocate for your race? You know, that's where it starts, is you know, making these compromises with your own family so that you get on well with them. And once you master that, then you can get on well with the rest of your race and advocate well for your race and know that you're not a hypocrite. Well, thank you very much for coming on today, guys. Thank you very much, listeners, for listening. Of course, we do all wish you a very happy 2021, and Radio Albion will be back next Monday with more Real Britannia for you.
Well, that's the round table. We dance where we're able. We do routines, to call the scenes, to footwork impeccable. We dine well here in Camelot. We eat ham and jam and spam a lot.